Bundy. My name is Lenora Bundy. Today's date is March 23rd, 1973. The time is 3 o'clock p.m. I will be interviewing Mr. Max P. Heavenrich, Jr. of Saginaw, Michigan. Topics to be discussed are Mr. Heavenrich's family history, his individual history, and his general viewpoints concerning Saginaw.
You ready to go? That's loud, that'll pick it up all right. You start out by asking where my family lived before they lived in Saginaw. My grandfathers, on both sides of the family, came from Germany during that period when there was a great emigration. Not immigration, but emigration from Germany to the United States. And interestingly enough, they didn't live very far apart, but they did not know each other over there. One came from Wiesbaden, and the other came from the Nuremberg area. My paternal grandfather, the one whose name I carry, came to the United States with as one of five brothers who all came over at the same time. And they came to New York, and then three of them came to Detroit because they knew people in the Detroit area and went into business in Detroit. They ran a clothing operation there. They were young, relatively young when they came to this country. And the exact date, couldn't tell you off the top of my head. Although it was sometime in the 60s, I believe. Around 1860 something there. Then that business did not interest them all. One of the brothers, having stayed in New York, he went to work traveling on the road for some clothing house. And he used to come to Saginaw about once a year to visit us. And first when my grandfather was alive, and later when my father and mother were still here. And they used to have to make Kartoffelpfannkuchen for him, which is potato pancakes. And German potato pancakes. He came to Saginaw to get them because my mother was a particularly good cook. My grandfather and his brothers opened a store in St. John's. The history of that store I do not know. But my grandfather, that store eventually either went out of business or was sold. And the one of the brothers in my grandfather's generation went back to Detroit and went to work for Northwestern Mutual Life Insurance Company and worked for them until he was 93 years old. My grandfather found out that little Jake Seligman wanted to go west because of his health, the health of his wife, and had this business for sale. And my grandfather, together with his brothers, bought this business. There were three brothers. Pictures of which are right over there. Sam, Carl, and Max Heavenrich were involved. Now, Carl was the PR man, or public relations man in the family, and a pretty good boozer, and never tended to business very much, but you could always find him over at the Elks Club or someplace like that, having a drink or two. And incidentally, he served on the first board of directors of the First Savings and Loan in Saginaw, or its predecessor corporation. And there is still in their records the fact that Carl Heavenrich served on that board. He eventually left Saginaw and they went west. And his daughter is a very old lady living at the South Bay area outside of San Francisco. and is a patron of the arts in the San Francisco area. My daughter, who lives in Berkeley, saw her a number of times, but has not seen her in recent years because their paths haven't crossed particularly, and there's quite an age differential. My grandfather then was the one left in Saginaw. He had bought Carl Hefnerich's interest in this business out. And it wasn't until the 1930s that he was able to eventually buy out the interest of the Sam Hefnerichs. Sam and a son of Sam's who lived in Detroit each had some shares, and we had to pay through the nose to get their shares back in the business. So then the business became totally owned by my father's family, which consisted primarily of himself, his maiden sister, my aunt, whose name was Peppy, P-E-P-I, and my mother, who was the third, really, basic stockholder, until our generation came along, and in the 1930s, I believe it was, late 30s, we started to become stockholders through transfer of stock down through the corporation. We still have the notes that they originally gave little Jake Seligman for the property when they bought it. When they bought the property, they had to give notes and then pay it off. They still hang on the wall of my office over there. And business was left in the hands of my grandfather then. My father had gone, who was Max Philip Hefnerich, had gone through University of Michigan, graduated in 1904, and was working for Albert Kahn, and was a very successful civil engineer. And his father's eyesight started to fail, so he was asked to come home. And I think around 1907, he did come home and gave up a very promising career in civil engineering. Interestingly enough, he and three of his buddies all started out together at the University of Michigan, and the other three all went on in engineering and phases of it, and of course have since passed away, but every one of them died millionaires. My father died still a struggling retailer, which shows the way the paths of life go. My grandfather lived until 1920, when he passed away. Although my father, for all intents and purposes, has been running the business almost exclusively since about 1917 or 1918. Because in his latter years, my grandfather's eyesight was so poor that he could not tell people except by the sound of their voice. And he'd go around and he'd feel the merchandise, and he could tell by feeling the merchandise whether it was a wool or what kind of a wool it was and how it was, had been woven and so forth. It was my father who conceived and built our present building, which we had built in 1926. And the story about him was that he knew where every nut and bolt in the place was, because being a civil engineer, he climbed all over the place. He built the well that, even according to modern standards, it's almost impossible to make any changes in it. It was built so strongly. And it still stands as one of the most well-built buildings in the city of Saginaw. My father himself lived until 1953, when he died very suddenly and unexpectedly, just at the age of 70. I was in the field of government research and had lived in many parts of the country, including 1 year here in Saginaw. And in 1946, I had just accepted an offer to go east to New Jersey on a very interesting job of straightening out a community at a rather lucrative salary with very nice increase and a guaranteed job for 5 years. But I had just quit a job in Dayton, Ohio, because there was an attempt there made to not meet certain things that should be met in the area. And I was being supported by the newspapers as vis-a-vis the Chamber of Commerce, through whom we worked at that time. So I had left and was doing some temporary work for the city of Dayton, Ohio. My father came down on Thanksgiving Day and asked me to come back to Saginaw. He said he needed help in the business. At that time, I recommended to him that he offer the opportunity to my brother-in-law, who is older than I am and who'd worked for OPA and for two or three different organizations in Indianapolis, having come originally out of Detroit as a lawyer. He implied he didn't want my brother-in-law in the business particularly. He preferred to have me here, but I insisted that he go talk to my brother-in-law first. Whether he actually did or didn't, I don't know. I always have suspected that that was one of his little white lies, that he had not talked to my brother-in-law, although he claimed he did. And I came back in the business in 46. And the bait he held out for me was that maybe he and I'd get a chance to go fishing every year, which we like to do. A promise which was never kept, incidentally, because my mother had developed certain illnesses and he never wanted to leave her for that long. We never did get any of our fishing trips in that we had hoped to get in. By that time, my third son had been born in January, or my third child and only son, Max the Third, was born in Dayton that January. And about when he was about 6 to 8 weeks old, we did move to Saginaw. And we've been here ever since, although there have been times when we have wondered why ourselves. When my father died in 1953, the family designated me as the manager of the family business. I had the same decisions to make that my father had in 1920, because he could have sold the business and gone back into, at least if the other stockholders had agreed, and gone back into his engineering, but he'd been away from it for quite a while. Well, by 1953, I'd been here for 7 years, and while I still was very active in governmental matters in Lansing and Detroit and various other places, the family needed somebody in the business. My brother has already committed to medicine. My brother-in-law did offer in the business at that time, but he wanted to come in on a basis where he would run the financial ends of the business and I would run the merchandising ends of the business. And we would be co-equal managers. And my response to him at that time was that he either become the manager of the business or I become the manager of the business, but that we both could not be equal managers. And that if the family so wanted him here, the family should so say. Well, I subsequently got a letter from his wife indicating that she wholeheartedly agreed with my position, although she couldn't say it to her husband. At that time, he was casting around trying to find a situation to his liking. He came from a different school of business than I did in terms of attitudes towards it. My whole philosophy has always been to put my business first, and his was somewhat different. Although I think he would have probably been a satisfactory operator of the business. The net result was I was left with the business to run. I had around me, fortunately, some good managers whom my father had helped train. And I had around me some bad manager who his soft heart and easy way with people led me to inherit men who would never be any better than they were then. But over the years, I have made up my mind that I was not about to fire anybody that he had hired, and this may have been a wrong decision, but I felt it was the best I could do. Now, some of the men have not advanced as well as others who've come in later, but at least they were not forced out of the business. We're now reaching the point where we've still got two of those men who preceded me in the business. And from 1946, rather, when I was the newest member of the firm, I have now become the third oldest member in terms of years in the business. And I may soon become the oldest, because both the other men are at retirement age. And under our policies here, unless we give them extended privileges, they will be forced into retirement. That gives you a little bit of chronologically of what has happened. My own son came into the business about 4 or 5 years ago. He worked part-time, then went to school, and then came back and worked, and eventually came back into the business full-time. And he has gradually been taking over from me in the period that he has been here.
You said before that you wondered a little bit why you're still here or something to that effect, wondered why you're in Saginaw sometimes. And I wonder, have you think that the attitude of people who live in Saginaw has changed over the years towards the city?
Completely.
How would this be? And if you want to repeat anything that you said earlier.
Completely. Of course, when you're young and growing up, certain things impress you more than they do when you're older. And I don't like to think that I'm enlarging on something or misinterpreting something out of the past. But the call to arms, literally, to serve the city in any capacity in those days was much more readily done than it is today. People today are much more selfish than they were in the past. Partly because our tax structure today drains off much of the money that in those days people did use for charities or for other organizations. I remember as a boy in the flu influenza after World War I, people knocked themselves out to serve others in the community, whether they were close friends or just people they didn't know. And that flu epidemic in those days took a lot of lives. You periodically see a rising up. Say if a family gets burned out now, you see a rising up of a few people to help, but you don't see an outpouring of the community. In fact, today, the newspapers publish these sob stories of this family that's been hurt or the little boy who's dying in an effort to reach people, literally, and to pull at people's heartstrings, plus making good news copy. And they do create some temporary interest. Now, we're spending more dollars today for various organized charities, but too many of our organized charities today aren't charitable organizations at all. They're organizations that serve the people with incomes. For example, how many little black boys from the first ward does the YMCA take care of as vis-a-vis kids from Saginaw Township or Hemlock or other areas around here? How many programs in this community are oriented, truly oriented, to people who really need them? Now, we've got that Lutheran community house out in the south end, and they try to do things. But that the child who has advantages can use it, too. We don't do as much as a people as a whole. And a lot of people don't have it to do with. And those who do have it probably have got money because they didn't do it. This is part of a thing. They're hanging on for those good times. Now, of the people, if you were going to go down to Fort Lauderdale, Florida right now, and take all the Saginaw people who are down there, and take their total contributions to charity in the last 5 years, and I'm not sure who's down there, I would guess it would be a pittance by comparison. Now, that doesn't mean that some of them don't do very well. But people no longer take the attitude that I am my brother's keeper. They say, oh, well, the government's taken that over. And one reason the government has taken it over is because, one, the tax structure has drained part of it off from people. Two, there are those in government who recognize that through the control of the social welfare programs of this nation, they can control the political philosophies of this nation. And there are actually conscious and even some subconscious efforts on the part of people in high office literally to control the thinking of the public across the country. For example, today you have one out of every six people in the United States either works for government, draws a check from government, or lives off money that the government furnishes. So in any given period of time, one out of every six people in the United States is not going to Santa Claus. Now, if you take out of that group the children, take the children out and just say, we'll only consider those of adult age, the percentage is much higher than one out of... I don't know what the exact percentage is, but I would guess it'd be almost one out of every three or four. So they literally have a built-in political structure, if you want to call it that, although it's not political in the common sense, that is destroyed the individuality of the public in their relationship to the things. Now, when it comes to Saginaw and the past, there are certain power structures in this community. There always have been. And these power structures rule for the sake of ruling and rule for the sake of protecting their economic interests regardless of what happens to other people. This leads us right into your question about downtown Saginaw. Downtown Saginaw was doing pretty well. Downtown Saginaw would have continued to do well. We had a program for developing the downtown, but we got certain politicians into control in the city of Saginaw who had to have more and more money because of inflation and other reasons to carry out programs that they wanted. The net result was they literally taxed businesses in this town out of the city. Taxes on downtown property, despite a series of assessment adjustments that started a few years back, they literally made it cheaper for people to move than to stay in these stores downtown. Then when they started this whole urban renewal project, they weren't really interested in building a new town. They were interested in bailing out certain well-to-do families who had large investments in the downtown area.
Did they also tax the home, their property where the home stand is?
Oh, yes. All
that was all raised.
Residential properties have always been treated fair, although there were several men on the city council whose homes were never assessed anywhere near what their true values were. And I don't think I need go into any specifics there, but I know one instance where a man's home, one of the most strongest political leaders in the city council, home was never assessed at over $6,500, and when he finally passed away, the whole home was sold for over $50,000. Now, technically, he should have been assessed at roughly $25,000, but he never was. His business properties never were assessed. The chain stores in this town were never assessed on the same basis as the locally owned retail stores. There have been various hearings and appeals taken that have proved these points. The state's tried to straighten out the assessment laws on it. Everything they've done to discourage people. The building of I-675 through the town was not built primarily to serve Saginaw, because it doesn't serve Saginaw. It was built as a bypass to a bridge that was improperly built in the first, and everybody knew it at the time, but the state highway commissioner, Mr. Mackey, got away with it, because it is the only bridge that opens on I-75 all the way from southern Florida to the Canadian border. It's the only bridge that opens the whole distance. They had to build a bypass in anticipation of getting ready for the new bridge. So they're going to have to build a new bridge there. But there never was any investigation. Mr. Mackey left the state, and as far as I know, is living in Virginia today. But Saginaw has been a relatively selfish community in recent years. Everybody is looking for what's in it for me. And that's why I say I wonder why we're still here. Because the philosophy of our family...
Excuse me, guys.
I don't want to be on
the team.
No, that's all right.